This is Kofi Kingston, and you're listening to the best of the New Day. Feel the power on Spotify.
Thank you guys for tuning in this week. It's going to be a little bit different than it normally is. As you know, this is a podcast full of a lot of high energy, and it's very jovial, very light, usually tons of laughs and stuff, but we're not really laughing a lot right now. And so we just want to make sure that everybody understands this is going to be very heavy for a lot of people. For a lot of people that don't know these things, we hope that you are able to listen and use this to hopefully educate yourselves on someone else's life experiences that you may not have the same ones. So I am Xavier Woods, and we have multiple people here on the panel. So please, Kof.
I'm Kofi Kingston.
I'm Big E.
And we have a fantastic fourth member on the panel here today, and I will allow him the opportunity to introduce himself and explain his qualifications.
Thanks. Name's Andreas Hale. I'm currently the senior editor of combat sports at Sporting News and DAZN. Prior to this, I worked at BET. I was a senior editor at Hip Hop DX, a hip hop site. I've written for Billboard, the Grammys. I have a background in activism. I used to be the chairman of the Las Vegas local organizing committee of the National Hip Hop Political Convention. So yeah, I think that covers it.
Yeah. This obviously is about everything that's going on today in the world. All of the current events, people upset. We people are scared. And all of us have, you know, we've spoken about things on Twitter and, you know, told a little bit of our stories and how all this makes us feel, how being Black in America makes us feel, the things that we have to deal with that not everyone has to deal with, the conversations that we have to have in our homes and the information we have to get from our parents and pass on to our kids. And it's a lot. And honestly, I'm not really sure where to start with all this, but We want to let you guys know what we're feeling, because just because we are in the position that we're in, that we're part of WWE, that we're on television, that we've got a little bit of a following, that does not mean that we don't feel these same exact things. And so we just want to make sure people know that there's a lot of pain that people are going through, and we want people to listen to it.
I think for me, one of the first things that came to my mind is that when I saw George Floyd on the ground be murdered, I see myself in George Floyd. When I hear Breonna Taylor's story, I see myself, I see my sisters, I see my aunts. I see us, like that could have been us, man, that could have been us. And it's something, I can't think of anything that's hit me like this. Anything that's really just, haven't been able to get this out of my mind. It's really weighed heavy on me. I think it's been a hard few months for so many of us. And when Shad passed, when Hana Kimura passed, I kept imagining myself in the water. And for some reason, I just kept putting myself in Shad's position and not knowing, I don't know if he knew his son got to safety. I don't know what his last thoughts were when he died. The stuff that was going through her mind when she took her life, I just keep thinking, and I put myself in George Floyd's position when I saw him be murdered like that, and to have a man put his knee on his neck like that, man. And I don't know how you don't feel empathy for a man like that who's accused of passing a counterfeit $20 bill, man. He didn't deserve to die like that. And we cannot be okay with murdering us. You just can't be okay with it, because it's not the first time and it's not the second time. And we've seen it. And like I said, man, I've seen and heard these stories from my parents and their parents and their parents before them. And I cannot accept living in a country where this is acceptable, where it takes 2 days to get an arrest for this man. 2 days there was videotape. There was clear as day. That bothers me. That hurts me to my very core, to my soul. that this is what it took of 2 days of anger and frustration and people saying that this has to be enough. This, how long can we allow this to happen? Just imagine a man having his body weight, his knee on your neck until you die. And you're calling for your mom, man. He had no one. What was he supposed to do? You know, so that I can't stop with so many of these people that we're losing. I can't stop imagining myself in their shoes, in that position of, you know, this man had a daughter, you know, he had people who loved him. He had people who cared about him. Same thing with Ahmaud Arbery. Like we can't just shrug our, how long are we supposed to shrug our shoulders and say, damn, and move on about our day? So it's something that really, it hit me in my chest. It kept hitting me in my chest and it kept weighing on me. And I just feel like, you know, we were supposed to have a conversation. We were supposed to do some other things today, but you know, I'll say I'm really proud of you two brothers. I'm proud of y'all, the way y'all handle yourselves, the way y'all see the world, the way y'all see everything, because we all got on the same page with saying this, we got to, you know, put those things on the back burner, because this is something, man. And I don't know if it's meant to change hearts or to preach. I don't know what it is, but maybe I just need this for me. Maybe I just need to have a conversation for me to not just bottle it up or send some tweets, but to actually just to talk, to have a conversation. Maybe this is just for me. Maybe it's for no one else. Maybe it's for me, but it's weighed heavy on me, man. It's just weighed real heavy on me. So that's kind of what's just been in my mind this last week and change.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like E, you hit the nail on the head. And I think that's the scariest thing about all of these situations, is that it could very well have been any of us. Seeing the video of Ahmaud Arbery, like, he was just going for a run in his neighborhood. I've recently just started running around in my neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? And to be trying to, you're doing something that where you're trying to become healthier. You're trying to better yourself. And here comes a car full of people and they just murder you in the street. The fact that every time I go out by myself, or I go out with my family, in the back of my mind, there's always a thought of, man, what if, am I going to be next? Is, what if somebody pulls over and decides to harm me in some way? What am I going to do? It's almost like, you know, I'll leave the house and have almost like a plan of action, you know, in the event that something might happen. And we shouldn't have to live like that. No one should have to live like that, constantly looking over their shoulder in fear or worry that harm may come, you know. But the reality of the world that we live in today is that it is possible. And the fact that we've seen these images, it hits, but it's almost on a level of like, gosh, I can't, like, it doesn't seem real. But today, in this day and age, seeing the videos that are going around on Twitter of George Floyd, of Ahmaud Arbery, of so many people, it makes it very real to our generation. And it's scary, especially when you have kids. I saw someone had a post, Oos had a post, Jay, and he was condemning all of this. And somebody had written like, oh, well, just make sure you raise your kids right and they shouldn't have to worry. In theory, that should be the case, but that has nothing to do with anything. You could be the best person in the world. You could, you know, be the best scholar, you know, or the best businessman, just at the top of your class and whatever it is that you do. And the fact that you look a certain way will trigger somebody to pull up on you in a van with guns. You know, it's unconscionable, but it is the reality. It is a reality, and it's crazy to say that, you know. So I think we're all in the same boat here. And I think it's very refreshing, in a sense, to see that so many people who are not African-American coming to, you know, coming to the aid and really wanting to know what they can do. White America wants to know what they can do, you know, because I feel like these images specifically, like watching this, seeing this with your own eyes and knowing that it's real and that it's actually happening and it's not hearsay. It's not, you know, a story that you heard from somebody else. This is actually happening. You are seeing it. It is being ingrained in your body, in your mind. You are witnessing what is happening. Seeing that makes it very real. And it's not just for us, you know, it's for anybody, you know, who witnesses it. So yeah, I mean, I've gotten a lot of texts and a lot of messages from specifically my white friends who just want to know like what they can do. And I feel like this situation is just hitting a little bit differently. I feel like we're hopefully on the cusp of something turning around because we're not the only ones who have had enough, you know? So it feels good to have white America, you know, listening, you know what I'm saying? As opposed to talking about the semantics of Kaepernick protesting and talking about it being about the flag and you know what I'm saying? And he's specifically saying like, no, we're talking about police brutality and to bring attention to this issue. This is why I'm doing this. And people still want to talk about other stuff as opposed to the issue that's going on. So I feel like right now, at least more so than in the past, you have a lot of people who are supportive, overly supportive and really reaching out and wanting to do something.
Before I let Andrea speak his mind too, I wanted to just add, to go back a little bit and just add that the reason I wanted, we talked and the reason I thought Andreas was the perfect person to have this is not only his qualifications, but I've known Andreas has been a friend to me for years and he understands us too. So I don't want to just bring in an expert or someone from the outside, but he's covered Kofi Mania. He's a huge wrestling fan, not just that, but he knows us and he understands us. So I just wanted to preface it by saying, like, we're not just bringing in an activist or who's an expert, but he's a friend. And I've had so many of these conversations daily with Andreas, and he's really guided me with how I can help others or even just having an ear to listen to. I just wanted to have that conversation with someone who's been a friend to me for the last several years, but also who's really guided me during this time too. So once again, Andreas, thank you for being here and for being a part of this, man.
Yeah, definitely. Kofi, I want to pick up on something that you said. For years, we've had a lot of people tell us, like, if you just raise your kids right, everything will be okay. And the other day I saw on Twitter, there was a Nickelodeon had the 8 minutes break and some woman, white woman, was upset, asking, why is Nickelodeon taking my kids' innocence away? Our innocence wasn't taken away by Nickelodeon by choice. When we were first introduced to why we were being treated differently, it was by somebody else. Because, you know, we grew up wanting to love everybody. We didn't know we were different. I know in my case, you know, I was raised by an old Italian white woman. You know, that was my grandmother. And she tried to keep me away and wanted me to be the good black kid. But one day in third grade, I was in, you know, out on the playground and a kid was singing a song in 1964. My dad went to the war, pulled the trigger and shot an N-word. And that was the end of the war. And he pointed at me. He was like, you're the N-word. I couldn't figure out what that meant. And I had to ask. I was like, well, what do you mean? And he's laughing at me. He was like, my dad shot you. You deserve to die. We don't like black people. I was taken aback. I went home and I asked my grandmother. I was like, well, what's wrong with me? She was like, well, there's nothing wrong with you. And I was like, no, there's something wrong. If somebody's identifying a difference, you know, this early in my life, this took away my innocence and guided me on this crusade because there's nothing wrong with us. You know, we didn't wake up mad. You know, Rodney King wasn't the first situation where black people were upset about racism and police brutality. This has been happening for years, but our innocence was taken away at such an early portion of our lives where we had to acknowledge that we were different, not because of us, because of how somebody else perceived us. So when we have kids, you know, I have a 3-year-old daughter and I have a 14-year-old nephew and a 9-year-old niece, and they don't know anything about this until somebody tells them that they are different. And once they realize that they are different, now they're confused. And that's where the anger and frustration comes from. So I think this George Floyd situation is years of pent-up frustration for us, seeing nothing happening to the people that are treating us differently just because of the color of our skin. Because we didn't ask for this. I never woke up and said, you know what? I'm black and I'm mad. I don't think any of us ever did that. I think somebody else has told us, you're different. because of the color of your skin and not because of who you are. And I know people have been misconstruing Martin Luther King quotes. They've been misconstruing what Kaepernick, like the flag. No, man, it's like we don't want to be treated any differently. But I do want to say the one thing I want people to stop saying is that I'm colorblind. I do want you to see our cultural differences and acknowledge them and respect them. But I don't want you to treat me any differently. So I think when we look at this situation, when we talk about Black Lives Matter, and I'm sure all of us have looked at our Twitter thread and saw somebody try to All Lives Matter us. And it's like, yeah, but that house isn't on fire right now. Mm-hmm. All of these houses matter. Indeed, I agree. That house is on fire. Mm-hmm. And we got to put that one out. And this has just become disproportionate of Black men being killed on camera. Like Rodney King just got beat up on camera, which is crazy to say. He just got beat up.
Yeah.
Right. I've been watching people getting killed, dying, murdered, and no consequences or repercussions. So yeah, we're fed up. So I guess, you know, I appreciate being here, but it's like talking to you gentlemen, it's like, what do we do next? And that's, I think, what we got to guide ourselves through is like, how do we handle these situations moving forward so they don't continue to happen?
Right.
Exactly. I think one thing that's so telling is that you've seen people protesting all over the world. And like Kofi said, you know, I've had a bunch of friends, a lot of them white, just reach out and, you know, how are you doing? How can I help? But then there's like also an interesting thing to it where I have people that are white that I knew 10, 15 years ago, but we haven't spoken, nothing bad happened, but like people you don't talk to. So it feels weird to have people reach out with a, hey, I'm feeling bad. How are you? And it's like, I feel like we're all carrying this. We have been carrying this since we were kids, but I feel like as much as I do love the compassion, and I want people to listen and I want them to learn, there are some times where I myself don't know what to do. So I'm trying to also educate myself. I don't want to now have to also educate everyone else. Like we've already said these things, we've explained these things, but now that, you know, coronavirus is a thing and the world stopped and now the world sees it and now they protest. It's like, yes, this doesn't feel different to me. It feels the same as it happens every single time, but people aren't listening at those times. But now since they have to stop, they have to slow down, they have to watch the news, they have to know what's going on, now they see it. And it's almost like, I'm hearing so many things about people saying like, I had no idea. Like I love the compassion, but I don't understand how you didn't know. Like people have been telling you, people have been telling everyone. And it's, I was doing something with a friend and he said something that was very, very, I thought it was real strong. He said, you know, I'm happy for all this. It's better late than never, but never late is better. And it hurts because, like you said, Kof, talking about having kids, before when we have this fight and we learn about this fight and we have these talks in our home, Black families are independently having these talks with their children about how they have to be aware and be cautious and how they can't wear certain clothes, about how you can't wear Black hoodies with the hood up because someone might think that you're trying to steal something. You can't walk around in this area and have this color skin because people will think that you're going to steal their purses or jump into their cars. There wasn't a meeting where someone told all Black families, hey, we have to make sure we talk to our kids about this and this and this. That's happening independently in all Black homes across America. And so for people to come out and say, oh, there can't be a problem. Look at these numbers. There's no problem. If there wasn't a problem, people wouldn't be doing this independent of themselves. And the issue that I have is I don't know how to change the conversation that's happening in other homes to make it so that we have to have these survival conversations in ours. And we talked a little bit about, yeah, we try to use our voice for good and try to make sure people know how we feel about certain things, because people might be feeling the same way and it might help them. And so I feel bad because I feel like a lot of times we do know what to do. We do know what to say, but something like this is life or death, and it's been life or death. And I don't know how to fix that. Like, what are we supposed to do with that? You know?
Yeah. I'll say too, I mean, you know, we had, I think both of you guys had mentioned the numbers, right? And, a lot of times the argument that people will bring to the table is like, well, you know, there's white people being killed too, but it's just not being seen, or this is the actual numbers and these are the statistics. because white people are being killed in the same, you know, in the same amount or even more so than black people, and giving me like these numbers. To me, the numbers don't matter. Like, that doesn't make the argument, like, it, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make it better. Like, if black people are being killed in small quantities and white people were being killed in large quantities, it doesn't make me feel better about the black people that are being killed. You know, none of it should be happening. So to me, like, the numbers aren't really, like, it doesn't like soften the blow to me. Yeah. You know, it's something where, number one, like, what is the purpose in you telling me what the statistics are? Like, that's okay. If more people are dying in a particular race, then like it that's wrong too. I feel bad about that too, you know, but it doesn't, don't bring that to me as like an argument or like a debate. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not trying to like have these, like these debates, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. It's just, it's all bad. So let's do what we can to fix it. Even if it's one step at a time, you know what I'm saying? Like, we're trying to fix what's happening here. Like you said, Andreas, with the, this house is burning right now, let's put out this fire. Maybe there'll be another fire burning somewhere else. We'll all go help and put out that fire. But let's not, don't tell me not to put the fire out, you know?
And why, yeah. I don't understand why people feel like you can't be upset about more than one thing at a time.
Right.
Like for someone to say Black Lives Matter, then bam, right after, all lives matter. You need to make sure all lives matter. Like, if you're worried about all lives, yes, then just agree. Black lives matter. This is the issue. This is that we're worried about, that we're trying to change. So if you're trying to say that, oh, well, like this is happening over here. Okay, we'll be mad about it. Be out here. Say something. Stand up with us. If you're upset too and you're hurting too, stand up with us. Don't try to say that you're hurt or you're hurt that now has shown itself because we hurt. Something hurt us and we explained it, said it. And so now you're trying to dissolve ours because you have pain too. No, the pain can come together, and that's just unity so that we can do what we can to come together and get stuff changed and get things done.
For me, I don't have all the answers, but what I'm asking for at a very minimum is empathy. It hurt me to see in Buffalo an elderly man be shoved to the ground. That man was white. He didn't look like me, but it hurt because I could mm-hmm. see my grandfather. I could see people that I loved and respected. I could see, I might never cross this man's path or anyone who looks like him, but I see a man who needs, I see a frail man being shoved to the ground. I hear his head hit the ground. I hear his skull bounce off the concrete and blood ooze out of his ears by police. And how do you not have the empathy to understand the kind of pain that people are going through? How do you not have empathy to think that that could be you, that you might be young now, but you can be old and frail, and you would hope that someone would have enough care in the world to someone that is vowed to protect and serve you, to not treat you as if your life has no meaning? That is, I don't have all the, I'm not asking for everyone to necessarily be an activist or to run in their local government, but I'm asking you to start with empathy. I'm asking you to understand what we're feeling. I'm asking you, when you see a man be murdered on the street like a dog, and I keep thinking like a dog, but I wouldn't even say a dog, because there are so many people who don't give a damn about George Floyd dying in the street. But they, if that was a Saint Bernard being killed, that's a grotesque image. Imagine if that was a dog. Imagine the people who don't care about George Floyd dying, but would be outraged about a cop kneeling on a dog's neck for nearly 9 minutes and killing that dog. So I don't even say like a dog, worse than a dog, something below that. To see a man be murdered like that, to hear Breonna Taylor, imagine past midnight, she's in her bed and a warrant. They use a battering ram to knock down her door past midnight. She's in bed. For a man that was already in custody, and she was shot to death in her own bed, an EMT, someone during a pandemic that we were relying on to save lives. I'm asking you to just start with empathy. Just start with empathy. Just imagine that's you. Imagine that's someone you love, and imagine them dying in that way. Imagine them dying unjustly. Start with empathy. Start with understanding. And for me, I went on Twitter, and sometimes I don't know if Twitter is just typing things to pat ourselves on the back and feel like mm-hmm. we did something. And I really try to watch that within myself to make sure that I'm not self-righteously just tweeting. But I just went in this, just there's so much that people don't understand and don't know. And I think a lot of times a lot of people reach out to me, a lot of my white friends who told me they didn't know about the 1921 Black Wall Street Massacre. Start with understanding and learning, because these are things that we're not taught. I went to a prep school for 6 years. I took AP history, and it was a rigorous. I paid attention. I loved it, but we didn't learn about these things. Learn about the 1921 Black Wall Street Massacre. Learn about the 1985 bombing of a Philadelphia neighborhood. They bombed their own. Of a black kids died from a bombing by the police. Start to learn and empathize. If you really don't understand, please learn. Please look. Please learn something. And I'm grateful for the people who didn't get it but reached out to me and wanted to understand and wanted to learn. But I struggle. I really struggle to know what I can do, to know what I can solve. But all at the very minimum, it begins with empathy. To understand that could be any one of us. Start with empathy, please.
I think I want to pull it back a little bit because, I talk to you about this a lot because I don't think you and you guys realize how significant Kofi, you winning the title was at WrestleMania. And I want to pull this back a little bit because we cried. There was a lot of visceral tears that night because for years, our stories have never mattered in pro wrestling. For years, a lot of people didn't even know who our stories were. Like, my job as a reporter is to tell our stories from our perspective. Covering boxing and MMA and pro wrestling, I often see a lot of journalists tell the story of, like, he fought his way out of poverty to become the world champion. That's not all of our stories. And there's an inherent fear of African-Americans because the stories aren't told properly. And when representation matters, it doesn't just matter to us. As Black people, it matters to the rest of the world as well, so they can see that, yeah, we're not just bucks and we're not just violent people. Like, we have dimensions. So when I see you brothers on TV having fun and having a good time, it is something totally different than what I grew up with watching pro wrestling. I remember sitting with my grandmother and I saw The Nation of Domination. And this is when I started really becoming well-versed in Black history. And I saw Farouk throw up the fist and I was like, yeah. And my grandmother said, boo. And I was so confused. How are you booing Black pride? And at that moment, I realized, like, wow, a lot of people don't understand these stories and who we are. So the moment that the Kofi Mania thing started happening, people were getting behind it, and all people were getting behind it, not just because you deserved it, but for once, I saw somebody that looked like me, that acted like me, that knew how to have fun. Like, for years, I've covered Comic-Con, Sundance. I've been to E3. I'm a gamer. I'm a nerd. I see that in you guys. And what you guys represent is the dimensions of Black is Beautiful. So when you won that title and you gentlemen jumped in the ring and your kids were in the ring and celebrating, for once I saw us happy. Nothing else mattered. And I shed a few tears. My boy shed a few tears. Our friend Cass shed tears. We cried because that was the moment where I felt like we mattered. And then I saw the rest of the world saw that we mattered. And when I put together that video, you remember, I started calling together clips from across the world of people celebrating this victory because it wasn't just Black people. We deserve it. Like, we deserve these opportunities. We deserve to not be scared. We deserve to not to be portrayed as the bad guy. We deserve this moment. And for the rest of the world to see us, that we're not threatening. Like, we're sad. We have tears too. You know, and kind of diverting a little bit is, like, I started the thread when I met racism on Twitter because I wanted people to see that we are just like you. We hurt. We are in pain as well. So it's when the house is on fire, it's like, guess what? Your house is probably next if you don't put this one out. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to help put out our fire mm-hmm. and everybody else's fire because it's just not fair. It's not fair what's happening. And Xavier, I wanted to push the story forward. It's like, well, what can we do? And education is the key because we talk about, you know, Black Wall Street. We talk about these situations, but we got to learn the legal system as well. It's very key for us to get out there and understand what a second degree murder charge is or what a first degree murder charge is, what that entails, so we can temper our expectations when these things go to trial. You know, I think it's like a football team. The protests of the offensive line, which pushes the conversation forward. But you need a quarterback. You need an offensive coordinator. You need a head coach. You need people who are judges. You need people who are attorneys, law enforcement that looks like us, that police our neighborhoods. You need people that tell our stories. I need you guys out there having a good time showing that we're different, because the only way that this is going to change is if it changes on multiple fronts. Because people say, I'm not going to protest. That doesn't change anything. No, it just kind of starts the conversation. So how do we continue that conversation? And when you guys use your platforms to voice your pain, but E, when you're using your platform, throwing things about, you know, the civil rights era that people just don't know. I was so surprised at how many white people just didn't know our history, because it's not really taught in school like that. Like Black Panther, it's a footnote.
Yeah, it's confusing because we learn, like, what is it, in 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue and found America. And it's like, what? Like, we're learning that. That didn't even really happen. But all of this stuff that's part of our actual history and tells us why society is currently the way that it is all there, but it's not something that gets a spotlight. It's not something that you get to learn in school. And I don't understand why. And so I hope that there's with all of the different ways to document things now, especially in this day and age with cell phones and with being able to, you know, people have the cloud and they can put memos. And I hope that when this is done, history explains it in the way that it actually occurred.
Yeah, man. I think it starts because it's the reason we don't have these conversations is because they're uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I don't want to be sitting here crying, thinking about a man being murdered, but it's uncomfortable. And I think a lot of times we want to put this Band-Aid over these situations, and we want to talk about, you know, we often get this rhetoric that stop making it about race, stop pulling the race card. But let's talk about race. Let's pull up the rug. Let's have these conversations. Let's continue to have these conversations. I think I found a silver lining in this, and we're at over a week later and we're still talking, we're still having these conversations. And I think we still need to have honest conversations and not whitewash our history. I think what we often learn about Black history is that we had slavery and we had the civil rights movement, and that's about it. You know, there are things that happened in between. Some of us learned about Jim Crow. Some of us learned about Reconstruction. Some of us, you know, it's interesting to hear, like, when Andreas talks about the Nation of Domination being demonized by some and being booed by some, it's really interesting to me the way the Black Panthers are portrayed, because you learn, like, free breakfast programs are because of the Black Panthers. They did a lot of great work. And then we're not taught about COINTELPRO. We're not taught about the fact that the FBI tried to destroy these Black organizations that were attempting to aid their community, to provide free breakfast and to have all these programs. We're not taught these things. So, you know, there's so much to Black history, to our Black experience in America that we don't know. And for me, like Andrea said, I think it really starts with education, with learning more, with being empathetic towards these things and trying to. I see a lot of the comments that I see, and I've seen a lot of positive, but the comments that I see that are negative mostly come from a place of ignorance. You don't understand our history. You don't understand that this is one straw and underneath are 1,000 more. Andrea suggested Let It Fall on Netflix, which I watched, and it's about the LA riots. And Rodney King set off these massive riots in LA, but it wasn't just Rodney King. It was Latasha Harlins being killed and on tape. And her murderer does 5 years probation. You see her being shot clear as day in the back of the head. She's killed. And the woman that murdered her did 5 years probation. So it's these countless stories. I don't know what the final tally was, but at some point, 16 people, 12 of them Black, died because of chokeholds used by the LAPD. It's this concurrence of events that keep happening and keep happening. And finally, that last straw. And I even, it like disgusts me to even think of George Floyd's life like that, as just one little brick on this wall that's being built. But underneath it are so many of these cases of Black people being murdered by the police unjustly, and the cops are either fired, or if we do go, it's so hard to even get them to trial. And if they get them to trial, they're usually acquitted. And Andreas kind of just really filled me in on how hard it is to get a conviction in these kinds of cases.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about that real quick, because like we all were upset when George Zimmerman got off, right? But the conversation we didn't have is how the prosecution failed. They overcharged George Zimmerman of second degree murder, which means they had to prove beyond a reasonable doubt to a jury that he set out to murder that man. with no real proof. And he was just a civilian. Like, he wasn't even a cop. Cops have so much gray area that we really have to attack, like, the police handbook. Like, how do you properly detain somebody? What is an excessive use of force? What does that really mean? And we have to attack those things. So it's like, it is so difficult to get a cop to get the charges to stick. It's so hard to get them arrested. Now you bring him to trial. Like, let's go back to Oscar Grant, Yohannes Mezerle, who shot Oscar Grant in the back on New Year's. And he was found guilty. And the judge was like, nah, that's cool. We're just going to give him a couple of years time served. And he was out in like 6 months. But we have to understand the legal system and how it works. And we have to understand, like, that's why we have to become attorneys. Like, that's why it's important. Like, I look at my daughter, I'm like, well, you might have to be a judge, or you might have to be a teacher. Like, I got to have you do something else. Like, I want to be on the front lines too, but you got to do something different. Like, that's why teachers are so important. I mean, even the police, like, who wants to be a cop in 2020, honestly? Because they don't pay enough? Because they don't police our neighborhoods? Like, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if I had somebody that looked like me police my neighborhood. But we don't have that. There's no interest in being a cop. It's a scary thing, but we have to look at the handbooks and how these conversations are being had and educating. And the other thing is, like, uncomfortable conversation. Like, Muhammad Ali's, it's been 4 years since Muhammad Ali passed, and he's this beloved figure now. But there was a time that Muhammad Ali was like the most hated athlete in the world to white people. They just didn't like him because he wouldn't step forward for Vietnam, and he was loud and outspoken, and he called his fights. But people forget how much he was hated. And now when he became basically, Parkinson's took over and he couldn't talk, then they embraced him and loved him. We're never loved until it's too late, And it's funny now. That's why I think it's important that for you three, it's like, I got to give you your flowers now and what you're doing, because it means the world to me. And it means the world to my kids when they see you guys, because now they see, they're like, oh man, I don't have to be mad all the time. I could have fun and wear colorful stuff and it's cool. But we have to, like, let down our guard to that degree. And we have to let everybody else know. It's like, dog, it's time to have these uncomfortable conversations. Like, is the NFL going to apologize to Colin Kaepernick? Because the brother wasn't wrong.
I know, Andres, you talked about the thread that you started. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was when you pretty much had people describe their first encounter with racism. And so many stories happened at a very early age. And one of my big takeaways, just kind of going through that thread, which I wouldn't have really thought of initially, was the amount of bad experiences, racist experiences with teachers. And teachers are so influential. I was fortunate enough to have I can think of so many great teachers who really inspired me, who encouraged me. But you heard, and I read so many stories of kids who were either like directly, a teacher directly hurled a racial epithet at them, or they condoned one. They heard it from another student and allowed it. But there are so many avenues. Oftentimes I think of what we can do, but this needs to be addressed from a legislative standpoint. This needs to be addressed in our classrooms. This needs to be addressed in our homes. This needs to be addressed on so many fronts. And it just really, I don't have kids, but it truly bothered me to know that so many of these Black parents were dropping their kids off at school at young ages. I'm talking so many stories of kids who were 7 and 8 and they had an encounter with a teacher who was racist or who condoned racism. And I wonder how many times this happens. And after we actually had this conversation, and I forgot about this, but when I was in elementary school, we had a program called Gifted. And it was for the kids who tested well, who did well, and you got to be put in more accelerated classes. And I tested in the category to be in Gifted. I should have been in it automatically, a no-brainer. But for some reason, the teachers there or whoever was in charge decided that I wasn't going to be in it. And it took my mom coming down to that school and fighting to say, no, my son will be in this program because he deserves it. He's qualified for it. He's hit every benchmark. It made me think, how often does this happen? And who am I to say, I can't specifically point to that teacher or that administrator and say, no, you're keeping me out of this program that's going to help further my education because I'm Black. There are so many times like this where it's just this kind of thinly veiled racism that's allowed to happen in schools, in these really influential places. And it hurt me to think how often this happens at that level.
Especially as a child, because even though we are told these things by our parents as when we're kids, we don't understand them. We don't really get it. We haven't seen it. And then even in that point, so you said you hit all your benchmarks, you did everything that you could, but you still weren't in the class. And so for the people that might say, oh, well, you have no proof that this is, you know, has racial motives and things like that. It's like, well, the way that we're taught is that we do literally everything possible to get where we want to get. And so when we're told we've passed with flying colors, we've done everything that we could, we've passed the tests, we learned how to play instruments, we learned how to catch a ball and be an athlete, we can sing, we can dance, we can do all of these things we've taught ourselves how to do, but we still don't get to move forward. So in our minds, there's only one other reason. We've covered literally all the bases. And so to experience that kind of thing as a child is beyond painful, because it's confusing. It's confusing because you don't know what's going on. And as you think about it, as you sit and stew and you're upset and like you become in that mindset, like you just said, like, if this is happening to me right now as a child, how much is this happening around the world? And when you grow into adulthood, you realize that it's a constant fight. From the day you came out of the womb, you were fighting and you didn't have a choice. You simply want to exist. And when you're sharing a country where there are a group of people who may not want you to exist purely because you do, it hurts a lot. I remember when I was a kid, the first time that somebody threw a racial slur at me, I couldn't have been more than like 9 or 10. And my mom had told me, you know, if anybody ever calls you this, you have to tell me, you have to tell me. And to me, still not knowing, but I knew like this is a word that I will not be called. And so obviously as a child, he said it to me. I jumped on him. Our friends like pulled us apart. We both went home. And I remember I went and told my mom, and she was cooking and she immediately dropped everything that she was doing. And she said, tell me everything. Come to me and tell me everything. Because she knew that I was hurt. She knew that I was upset. She knew that I didn't understand why this happened. And she walked me over to his house. He lived in the same neighborhood. And went to the door, and his mom answered. And she told his mom that we'd gotten in a fight. And his mom didn't know why. So we went into their house, and my mom explained why the fight occurred. And this was very strange for me, because it was a day that I learned that people can say things that really, really hurt me that they don't even understand. But then it was also the same day that I learned that sometimes, even if someone hurts you, compassion might be an answer. It might be an option. And they agreed that for the next 7 days, we would walk to school together and we would be together in the same room at all times. And maybe like day four, he's playing Mortal Kombat on a Super Nintendo, you know, and then he's seen me watch him play, and he looks at me and he says, hey, do you want to play? And after that, we actually became best friends. And so in that first 24-hour period, I was so angry and just hurt. And I didn't understand why she was doing this. And I realized that she'd been there before. And she reacted how she reacted, and knew that maybe if she tried this, it would be a little bit easier for me to deal with. And I don't know. I keep saying this. I'm so sorry. I'm just, I don't understand how people have the strength to make these decisions for their kids, and when to teach them this and how to how to protect them from this. And I'm sorry.
Don't apologize, man.
Like I said, I'm the one person here who doesn't have kids, but I know it's something we've texted about, but I can't really even fathom the kind of conversations that the three of y'all are having, or I don't know if you're waiting to have, about what's happening in our country right now. But that's something that I couldn't imagine doing right now.
I think, you know, so Woods, you hit on a very important word in what you were saying in terms of being confused, that the situation is very confusing. For me, I don't know how I am going to have these conversations with my kids. And then going back to when I grew up, so the town I grew up in was probably about 95% Caucasian. You could probably count the amount of Black families in my high school probably on one hand. And for me, I think I was fortunate enough to not, I can't really recall any teachers that made me feel like I was a less, but at times it was very difficult having to deal with my peers. Every single day, there was some kind of a racial comment or, you know, a racial joke that was said to me, and it was supposed to be, you know, it was supposed to be a joke, you know. To me, it wasn't really funny. I can remember specifically, there was a time where a few of my teammates and I are kind of sitting around and everybody's just kind of going around making all these Black jokes. You know what I'm saying? And I remember one of them saying, you know, going out of his way saying, well, you know, I never lost to a Black kid. I said, okay. Another one was saying something about me. Basically, like the crux of it was that I was supposed to be essentially ashamed of being Black. So the joke was that I was in a bathtub full of bleach, crying, asking God why my skin was dark. And I'm in this tub of bleach, wishing that it would bleach my skin white, you know? And these are my, I liken it back to confusing, because these are people that are supposed to be my teammates, my friends. Why are you saying these things to me? You know, there were several situations where things like that happened, and I didn't really have anywhere to go. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really have anyone to talk to. The term outnumbered is not the right word, but in terms, like I said, of Black families, this was the way that things were. And I don't want it to come across as like, this is the way that it was. Like, it was an incredibly, there are certain schools or situations where people deal with a lot more, I guess, more like violent and heavier racial situations than I dealt with. But by the same token, I think there's more of like a support system there, you know? So for me, as a father now, I'm always just kind of listening to what my kids have to say when they're playing with people, just listening to what those interactions are like to see if they're experiencing any of what I, you know what I mean? Like what I experienced, so I can kind of guide them in that sense. And it's just peculiar, you know, you don't want to project your experience on your children, which I'm sure, you know, and I don't want to make assumptions about your situation, Woods, but the fact that your mom didn't tell you about any of that until you were 9, you know, and came to her with it, you know what I'm saying? I'm sure she didn't want to do the same thing either, you know, and project all the disgusting situations that she was in, the hurtful situations that she was in, and project that onto you as a child who looks at the world and doesn't know that yet. You know, I get the sense of wanting to just protect them for as long as I can, you know, and try as hard as we can to like, to maintain that innocence. The other day, we were on the beach and an older gentleman came to me, and older white man We were in California. I guess he was from Jersey or something like that. But he was just like, man, this is beautiful, isn't it? Just looking at the kids and looking at them all just playing together, all different races and ethnicities on the beach playing together without a care in the world, you know? And we're just sitting there talking about the way that they're in this little bubble, you know, they're in this bubble where everything is the way that it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to have to worry about somebody being less or making you feel like you're less because of the color of your skin. You're supposed to be on the beach playing and jumping in the waves and interacting and having fun as kids should do with kids. And the reality of the matter is that just a few miles down the road in Los Angeles, there are riots going on and a lot of hate being spewed and obviously across the whole nation. But yeah, I think for, again, going back to me and like in high school, it's just, I don't know how I got to this point, you know, because I look back at it now and it angers me, and it angered me then. I never lashed out. I feel like there's a lot of people who don't know what to do with their aggression because they see all these things happening and then they go out and do something that will get them in trouble. But you know, you shouldn't go out and do the wrong thing and you get penalized for that. But what about the bigger picture and the reasoning behind why people are acting a certain way? You know, I just look at myself and I just feel so fortunate that I was able to block all of that out, you know, and get to this point now. But not everybody is in that situation. And again, going back to being a father, I just feel like, you know, you have to be very conscious of that possibility, because all it takes is one incident for somebody who is in the position of protection to take it, you know what I mean? To like, I don't know, just to harm you based on what you've done. So this is my first time as a parent, you know what I'm saying? We haven't been parents in the past, like, you know, you figure it out as you go, but it's, you just hope, or I just hope that I'm doing it right. Yeah. As children out there, it can be very confusing. And I think we've all been the victims of that confusion. It's just something else. It's crazy to think about the reality of the world in which we live.
I think the thing that we've got kind of all hit on the head here is like, hate is a taught language. None of us are born to hate. Our kids are born to love, and we got to stop teaching hate. And the people that have done us wrong or have done our kids wrong, like, I looked, my nephew's 14, and I asked myself every day, is like, do I take his innocence away, or do I wait for the world to take it away from him? And I'm trying to find that proper moment to sit down and have these conversations with him. And the movie, The Hate U Give, it came out, and I was like, you know what? I want you to watch this movie. And he just broke down in tears like 5 minutes into the movie. He's like, I don't want to see any more Black people dying. And that hit me really hard, because I didn't think that he was paying attention, but he is. And the language of hate was taught to him by one of his friends that said something crazy to him. And all that comes from somebody else, which is a parent that teaches their kids that they're better or they're worse than somebody else. And I think it's up to us to spread the language of love and acceptance and making sure that we are perceived as everybody else. Like, we're cool too. We can have fun too. Our kids will love you if you love them. Like, I remember a situation when I was a kid, a white kid came over to my house and he said he didn't have any toys. So I gave him a bunch of my toys. And his mother came over and talked to my grandmother, who she was thoroughly surprised that my grandmother was this white woman. And she said, I didn't know a Black kid could be so kind. And I was like, wow. You know, as a 9-year-old, I was like, excuse me, what? Yeah. And my grandmother was like, well, get the hell out of my house. Right. Another thing is, and I think we've all dealt with this, is that I've been told, and I think I'm sure all of us have experienced, is like, you're the good Black friend, right?
You're
mm-hmm. the good
one. You're not and like I, the other ones.
And right. my, you know, I always tell people, like, well, you need to meet more Black people, because there's so many Black people that are just like me. We're all good ones, mm-hmm. you know, and we have to teach that. It's like, it's a language of love. And, yeah. you know, I'm not the good Black friend, because I'm just as mad as those cats out on the street that are protesting with their fists up and protesting for their lives. And I'm just as mad as them. So don't look at me as any different from them. I harbor the same passion as them. I'm not the good Black one. We're all good Black ones. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as we can continue to project that energy, that'll help the future, because look, some people are just too far gone. But we have to recognize our allies and those who do care and those who do want to learn. And I see too much on social media of cancel culture, like cancel this dude because he said this. But I've seen a lot of guys that mean well, guys and girls that mean well and just don't understand. So I think it's our job to kind of like bring them in. It's like, well, look, sit them down and have this conversation and say, look, man, this is how it should be. Like, I understand what you're trying to say with this All Lives Matters thing, but here's my perspective. And since you consider me one of the good black ones, I want you to listen to this good black perspective on this. Mm-hmm. And join me in this. And that way you can teach your kids not to kill my kids one day. Because I think that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, I don't want your kids killing my kids. And I want our kids to all love each other. And I don't want to see another cop standing on a man's neck. I don't want to see another person getting beat down. And like, I wear this shirt that says, we march, y'all mad. We sit down, y'all mad. We stand up, y'all mad. We die, y'all silent. And people say, well, what is y'all? I was like, y'all is anybody who's not speaking up to these issues. Mm-hmm. Don't be silent. And when this protest dies down, because it's going to die down, let's keep these conversations going. It doesn't have to be the same fervor that we're doing it with right now, but it's just minor conversation. It's just representation and how important it is and how much it matters. It's just, let's keep that energy going into our elections when it's time to vote. Learn what you're voting for. Learn who these judges are. And like I said, one day, I hope my daughter's a judge. I hope your kids are educators of some degree or police or whatever they can be, so we can all take care of each other. But I think we just need to see more of us in the world. I think the rest of the world needs to see more of us as well, all loving each other.
One thing that you touched on, the idea of, you know, like you said, being the good black friend. E and I were talking about this the other day. Came to the realization that throughout our entire lives, we're taught about how it's going to be, and we figure out the best way to get through that. And for a lot of us, that is making sure that people see us as non-threatening. So the work, the countless hours, we have to be on guard to make sure that if there's someone around who might be nervous around us, we have to make sure that their fears are assuaged. Because if they're scared of us and they leave this interaction and we haven't presented a kind smile and a big hello, they'll pass us by and later still be scared of us. But if we do the work to smile and wave and make them feel better, then maybe they'll feel better later. But it's such an unfair thing to put on anyone. You have to make everyone else around you who might be nervous about how you act because they think that you are a certain way, you have to try to make them feel better. And I know that a lot of people have felt that way, and it's a harsh realization to come to when you haven't really thought about it in those terms. You think, oh, you know, I'm a happy, bubbly person. And it's like, well, why are you always overly bubbly? Why are you always overly, yeah? Most of the time, because I am, but a lot of times it's because I want to make sure people know that I'm not a threat. And it's like subconsciously deep in my mind. And I hate that is something that I have to be conscious of. And I have to perceive how people are around me. We have to be super empathetic to others in order to know how to act around them. There's so many layers to it, you know? And I feel like the people that don't understand what's going on, like that's one of the things that's at the core, is that yes, we can get a bunch of laws changed, and I hope that we do. And I hope that we figure out how to, you know, use our anger and rage and funnel that and attack at the voting booth, you know. But at the same time, it's so much harder because things have to fundamentally change in people's minds across the world, you know. And it's just a heavy thing to put on anybody's shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say too, and I kind of mentioned it before, but you saying that people have to change across the world, honestly, and we talked about this in text, this situation now is just hitting differently than it has in the past. And I have more hope now based on the actions of people that have approached me, based on the action that I've seen on Twitter and people, you know, on Instagram. Just really, it feels like this is the closest thing I've seen to being the beginning of that change. So I think for me, as far as like the light at the end of the tunnel, I don't know. I'm sure that this has kind of happened before in some way, shape, or form, and people have gotten on the same page, and then for whatever reason, it kind of dissipates and devolves back into the state that it was in. But I just really feel now, again, like now more than ever, that this is the start of something, you know. And it's a shame that things had to get this extreme. And I didn't even take that into consideration. You mentioned earlier about the fact that the world is forced to slow down because of the pandemic. If the world was going on the way that it normally has been, and we weren't having to shelter in home, and we weren't having to be inside, and we weren't having to not be at work, or, you know, not having, we had our sports available, we had things to do, would we have had the focus that we have now to be able to focus on this issue? So I don't know. Like I'm a big believer in everything happening for a reason, and not to say that, you know, God made this pandemic happen so that people could stop, so that, you know, police brutality could come down. But whatever the reason may be, coincidentally, I feel like people are listening. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know. It just feels like it's the start of something, hopefully revolutionary, you know, and hopefully when our kids look back at this moment and they look back at these times, they'll say that, man, you remember what happened and the way that things used to be. It's almost like us looking back to like the 60s, and granted things are not 100% as good as they can be. There's a lot of work to be done for sure. But I don't know, you look back at the 60s and you think like that was an era of the way that things were, when things were very violent and et cetera. Hopefully when our kids look back at these times, they'll kind of have that feeling, and it will be genuine, and it will be a lasting effect, and something that will be unconscionable to think about even regressing and going back to the way that things are now. So I don't know. I'm very hopeful. I just feel like this, the energy just feels different, you know, and I can't really explain it. I just feel like instinctually and instinctively in my gut and my intuition, it just, this situation now just feels very, very different than anything that's happened, at least that we've lived through in our lives. So,
right. I mean, I'm with Andres completely on continuing to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. I think we need to be honest with ourselves, and that extends to me as well. Like, what can we do? Are we lending our voice in a way that matters? Are we not just, you know, tweeting to pat ourselves on the back? But what will our activism, what will our voice look like in a month, in 2 months? What will we continue to do? And also continuing to make sure that we don't miss out on filling these gaps, like continuing to protest for Breonna Taylor until she gets justice, and just the litany of people who have been slain by the police unjustly, continuing to fight for them, continuing to do our part in whatever ways we can, and to make sure, man, let's take care of our Black men, our Black women, our Black trans men and women who are being mm-hmm. killed, who are often overlooked. Let's continue mm-hmm. to look inside of ourselves, to be honest with ourselves, continue to be empathetic as well. And once again, I want to thank Andres for guiding me. There's a lot I knew, and he's really helped me see a certain perspective and kind of fill different gaps with my understanding of the situation. But I really feel that these conversations are so important, man. To me, we wanted to have some fun with what we were going to record before, but I struggled to find any, if this isn't important to us, if this doesn't move us, if this doesn't shake us to our very core, then to me, nothing else is important. Nothing else matters. If this, we talk about civil rights, but it's, I forgot where I heard this or where I borrowed this from, but it's human rights. It's human rights. The same empathy that I would want for someone who looks like me, I hope for my female friends, for my gay and lesbian friends, I want to have that same empathy. It's human rights. That's the conversation. And I hope we continue. And I hope it's not short-lived in this moment of anger and outrage, that we continue to have these talks, that we continue to be empathetic and to continue to progress this movement.
I wanted to say one thing is that I know you three have asked, you know, what do I do next? But I think what you're doing right now is so important, because when has this conversation ever been had on this platform, this kind of a platform, you know, to an audience? Like, what you guys have done thus far to bring joy into so many people's lives, and then now we're taking a break to have these hard conversations that other people are just unwilling to have. You've already taken the first step. Like, I appreciate you guys just giving me this platform to talk. Like, I feel like this is kind of therapeutic. But I think there's going to be so many people at home listening that are going to be inspired just by knowing that the three of you are willing to have these conversations. Because there's so much fear in, like, marketing and branding, and who am I going to offend by talking about Black issues? The fact that you guys are doing this means the world to me. It really does. And I think there's so many people out there that are going to agree with that, because, you know, we need it. We need this therapy. You know, if we're not going to get therapy, we need to have it with each other. And we need to show that we love each other. And I love what you guys have done. And I love that you have pushed this conversation forward when some people would not dare do this 15, 20 years ago, would not dare take that opportunity. So if you're asking yourself what to do next, you're already doing it. And always remember, like, the Civil Rights Movement was not like this big national movement with millions of people. It was a small group of people that started these conversations. The marches were big, but the minds that started it, there was not too many of them. And you three just doing this, I mean, look, man, I'm not saying starting a revolution already, but damn it, we're getting it started, at least moving the conversation forward to another audience.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I think all three of y'all, man, this is like Andrea said, this has been therapeutic. I needed this. I needed it. If no one else needed it, I needed it.
I agree with you. I feel like, I mean, like, we're already aware this is a very, like you said many times, uncomfortable conversation to have. And I feel like I've been having it for like the past, I don't know, forever. but definitely like the last 72 hours has been a lot of phone conversations, 2-3 hours long, going through this and talking about it again and just crying and just like an overall legitimate exhaustion from feeling all of this. And I think Andreas, you're 100% correct. And I'm glad that you were here to be able to talk to us about all of this, because I feel like my thoughts, I get completely scatterbrained in the middle of talking about this and I go a million different directions. And I feel like I'm not eloquent and can't get the point across. So I'm glad that you three are here to be able to, you know, get those things across, because it's important that we have people that are able to do that, especially right now. So Andreas, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, man.
Thank you.
I know I usually bristle at the, you know, a conversation like this about dropping socials, but I do want, Andreas has been doing some great work on Twitter. So Andreas, where can we find you?
You can find me at Andreas Hale. I also host a podcast with my good friend Kel Dansby on combat sports, pro wrestling, boxing, MMA, called The Corner Podcast. But yeah, everything's at Andreas Hale, and you can find me rabble rousing talking about everything else, because that's just what we do.
All right. Well, thank you for being on. And everybody, make sure you check him out wherever he is. You know our socials and all that stuff. And if you want to interact, or I don't know, conversations are going on, just try to stay safe out there and talk to your friends, talk to your families, and keep the conversation going.